the reminder of how the skills we develop in the contemplative life, and not to see Buddhism as a belief system, rather as a skillful means for discovering the truth. Because if you believe, say, if I believe in impermanence, about something, I said, oh, this will change. I'm going to watch it change. That's the reflective mind. And that's what we use in Buddhist contemplation. So remember that. It's not like taking these strange teachings about anatta and things like that. If you just sort of spin it out into thought, you can really go off in a tizzy. But they're not really for taking positions, but just to actually observe the way things are. So that contemplative part of the mind. I think, again, we're people, if people get stuck with Buddhism in a kind of limited way, as if they just believe in it. So they have faith, but they don't have the contemplative mind. The opposite is having no faith, not even giving it a try, always doubting. That's the opposite. A person who's always doubting and never really kind of gives it a go. So the reflective mind, contemplative mind, from Thai Pijarana, they say, from salt alone, like this thing. So that's very important to understand what the difference between contemplation of a teaching is and just believing or disbelieving. Recollection, how we can, like I can recollect the Dhamma, I can be kind of getting uptight about something and I can recollect. Where is it in my body? So I recollect some kind of wholesome practice. Or I can recollect states of mind. I can, like I was saying, I can evoke a feeling of compassion. So the idea of recollection and when you read about mindfulness in the text, it's not just kind of holding on to the present moment, but it's also the skill of recollection. So you have things like recollecting Dhamma, recollecting the breath. So reflection, recollection, then just training, like I was saying, training, purification, those kinds of things inside. So what I would hope what we would take away from here, well, you can't take away the experience. You can try to take the river, I'd like to bring it into the flat and so it can't be that. So experientially you have to give everything up. There's no choice, no option. It gives itself up, as it were. But the recollecting part, that the capacity of our mind to recollect and reflect, that skill that we can take with us, no matter what our experience. So if you're going to work Tuesday and you're starting to get uptight about one of the co-workers, and then you think, oh no, I've lost it all. Miss Galilee. Then that's not recollection. That's panic. The recollection is, oh, this is what's, whatever you want to say, but then you come back to Dhamma. Because you will lose it all. And if you... There is this. We were talking about this. My apologies. We didn't keep noble silence. We were hopeless. But I never get together with these beings, so it's great. But we were talking about this phrase in the Pali. I think it's ahankara mimankara, which is I making, mind making, this manufacture of a me in thought. So if I start to feel the symptoms of the flu come up, right? Maybe I have something very complicated and difficult coming up. There's the symptoms of the flu and the sickness which one has to deal with. Okay? So there's a sense I'm sick, but oh no, I'm sick. I am sick, and how am I going to do? I've got this deadline to do, and then oh my gosh, and I'm never going to. That's a hankara, mimankara, I making, my making. And if we're not careful with that, we can plug into all our negative perceptions about sickness. And not only is the body sick, we've taken all that whole posture, And that's one way of talking about attachment, which can just create, well, it obviously creates such a complexity around simple things like tiredness, pain, like losing sleep, like a lot of people who have difficulty sleeping. That's a really hard one to deal with because it is difficult. You don't want to, you know, hit your head on a computer screen at work, not off. So then, oh no, how am I going to work and what am I going to do? So then not only is there the difficulty of the insomnia, there's also the ahankara mimankara, the I making, the can you manufacture the sense of I? And that we can let go of. We still have the symptoms of the flu and we still have the necessity to take care of the body. So it's not dismissing that part, being kind to the body and so on, but it's the ahankara mimankara, this manufacturing. So if you go to work and then it's stressful and then you start to manufacture the sense of ahankara mimankara, you can go back into the same contractions that you were before the retreat. And no, I've lost it all. But you can also say, oh, this is panicky feeling. This is feeling I've blown it all. Or whatever you want to say, but then you can be with it. And it's hard, sure, certainly. Work is stressful. But it's a big part of Buddhist reflection is to move away from that. I make it, my manufacturing. And then the way the teaching was laid out, that the Buddha began with generosity. And then ethical impeccability, and then cultivation of the mind and an insight. So how can we return to the world and be a blessing to all sentient beings? This is the challenge. That's the way Ajahn Sumedho would always phrase it, rather than being a nuisance to all sentient beings. So it's not like... the more undemanding we are of the world in an inner sense, and yet the more we can be socially engaged, that's a kind of beautiful balance that we try to find. You have a momentum in sitting practice. You had no choice. You're going to just and you were willing to come here and bear with the first few days of restlessness and dullness and all this kind of torturous mind states that one kind of clears away. So there's a strength now to the practice, even though you might not think it, but. There's a certain amount of momentum and a certain amount of clearing away of debris and a certain amount of getting in shapeness, you know, that kind of thing. So how can you use that? How can you sustain that? And that's the big challenge of keeping a daily life practice. It seems to be a very difficult discipline because it seems so inert and so innocuous and so nothing seems to be happening. I was comparing like the learning to be the silent witness is a very subtle spiritual practice because the practice of being excited by the world or frightened by the world is the way I was thinking. It's like if you really drink strong coffee with four sugars and lots of creams, right? That's a really powerful, wow, that's strong. And then you drink herbal tea. How can you drink this stuff? And the silent witness is like herbal tea. You know, it's so subtle. But we want the kind of, when you read about the bliss and the fireworks. And so people perceive enlightenment to be sort of an acid experience. A good trip. What a bummer. But it's not that. You know, it's not a condition. It's that knowing. So it's very, very subtle. So the Buddha taught there was the uncreated, the unconditioned, the unoriginated, the unformed. If there was not the uncreated, the unconditioned, the unoriginated, the unformed, the deathless Nibbana, if there was not that, there would be no freedom from all day sickness and death. So it's not a matter of getting reborn. You don't want to be a born-again Buddhist. We're, you know, it's the end of recycling. it's a different... So it's not becoming. It's not getting anywhere. It's like, it's this very subtle kind of, this is the way it is now. So in terms of like thought, you know, this thought seems to be such a nuisance, doesn't it? So you can like take a thought, think it deliberately. I don't like thinking. And then notice that knowing is always there. The thought came and went. Notice the end of a thought. So now you have the end of a retreat. Okay, so Sisyphus is put down the stone. Don't start building again. Just enjoy the view. And so as you, the mind likes to pick up a sense of self, because that's what desire does all the time. It likes to engage in that way. But the knowing, that knowing, and now is the knowing. Yeah. So it's a very, very subtle practice. But within that, that's the gateway to the deathless. I was thinking how to include Christ as risen, right? And I couldn't quite... I was thinking about that and spreading mudita to the Christian community, because this is their most important and most joyous day. Whatever one might think of Christianity, for them it is a day of resurrection and light and so on. So for me, light is that when I awaken to things, then that's light. And when I'm lost in things, then that's darkness. And I don't want to go into sort of comparative religion, because that gets kind of confusing. So, if you can also, your buttons get pressed at work and all that, if you can use those to find mindfulness within your buttons, then you become button free. The buttonless, right? The deathless, the buttonless. So work is it's like, on one hand, if your buttons get pressed and you just get overwhelmed by it, you don't have any awareness, then it deepens the karma that way. But on the other hand, if you're about to get pressed and you just can hang out with a witness and feel whatever it is and go the course, then the karma of those buttons wears out. So there's kind of both possibilities. So I thank you for hanging out with me here. I'm really, really grateful for the opportunity to, as I say, share my hobby. Because it's a wonderful. I was thinking last night, I still love this stuff. You know, after kind of 30 plus years, I still have a passion for this stuff. So I'm grateful to be able to talk about it. I have a lot of good friends now in Ontario. It's rather nice thing to come back to care of mom. Is that I left in '69, and I went off to places east and so on. And so I didn't live in Canada from 1969 till 2 years ago. I came back and forth, so now I have all these lovely friends, so it's really nice. So we need to do the. Those who would like to take the five precepts, now this is the way we usually finish a retreat. So those who want to take the